Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I don't believe I had the Romantics on the bumper music list. That has been rectified.
Good.
And last week I started putting the Spotify list up, so I'm doing the playlist for the bumper music at the end of the show, and then I'm putting a Spotify playlist together for Fred, because I knew that Fred would want to hear some of the music. You do pick up some songs occasionally from
here,
right?
I get a lot of advice from you.
Well, I'm very 80s-centric this afternoon. Sometimes you just get
mood.
Did you have another traffic note that you wanted to share?
No, that
was it. Are we up to date? Okay.
Yeah.
What the heck was I going to say here? There was something I was going to say.
We're going to talk about the astronauts.
I'm going to talk about the astronauts.
Ooh,
let's just remind folks that we have one more, two more fish fries, but this week we're at St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood. Fred has already arranged the roundtable panel. I think John Gaskin and Greg Keller will be there on Friday. We had a great time, by the way. Let's go back to Friday, because George Gray did a spectacular job.
He did.
With The Price is Wrong. And I think the audience, the live audience, was very engaged, which was cool. So we had a great time. We thank the folks at Queen of All Saints. They're all very different. You know, not very different, but they all have their little stamps of uniqueness on the fish fries, right?
Yeah, they do. We have yet to encounter a place with salmon. Usually that happens once a season. I'm wondering if that's upcoming.
Sounds like Sue is hopeful that that's going to happen.
Hey, I stopped. Right, I stopped by the crumble cookie
at
Busch Stadium on Saturday, and Melissa was there.
Awesome.
Melissa Bowman. We had her, you know, in person on Friday. Still, business was going like crazy.
Good.
Long lines.
Yeah, she said they were crushed on opening day, which is a great thing, and we appreciate the crumble cookies that she brought by over the weekend. I brought some cookies in today, Fred. I remembered them. Did you try some of those?
I did. They tasted great.
Made my copycat double tree, which are good, and then the chocolate chip are good as well. So I meant to bring those to the fish fry, but I forgot. We'll try to get refocused for this week. So earlier today, and this was kind of done in two parts, the astronauts who just returned from the International Space Station, Barry and Sunita, often known more often as Butch and Sonny. I can't call Butch Barry. That's just weird. Yeah. He's a Butch, right?
He is a
Butch. He sounds like a Butch. And then Sonny is Sonny. We've gotten to know them over the course of the last couple of weeks. But Bill Hemmer did a sit-down interview with them that was sort of an exclusive on Fox. They ran several parts of it this morning. It was really interesting. It was very compelling. But then they held a news conference as well. Now, before I play some of the audio here, Fred, you listened to some of this.
Yeah.
To me, what's happened to a certain extent is Butch in particular. I think they both are being very diplomatic about what happened up there, because they're always prepared for whatever might happen. There was a question that was asked, you know, a couple of months ago when they were still on the space station. This may go back 5 or 6 weeks now, 7 weeks, about being, you know, kind of left up there. And Butch seemingly agreed that there might be some politics at play with all this. Well, he doesn't want to play that game right now.
Oh,
he didn't feel stuck at all.
But you said, we don't feel abandoned. We don't feel stuck. We don't feel stranded.
Right.
Could I use the word marooned?
Okay. So any of those adjectives, They're very broad in their definition.
All right, so this is where he gets diplomatic here. Listen to Butch.
So, okay, in certain respects, we were stuck. In certain respects, maybe we were stranded. But based on how they were couching this, that we were left and forgotten and all that, we were nowhere near any of that at all. So, stuck, okay, we didn't get to come home the way we planned. So in one definition, we're stuck. But in the big scheme of things, we weren't stuck.
Okay, they were stuck. It's just he's saying that he was prepared because this is what they do. They reinforced, you know, this is part of their life and their mission. So they're up there. They have to adapt. Did Boeing, you know, Boeing did Starliner. Starliner failed. Are they to blame?
The Boeing Starliner was a big project. It had a lot of delays. That happens.
It does.
Did Boeing screw this up?
Wow, I thought you might ask that question. Screw it up. Space flight is hard. There are many questions that, as the commander of CFT, I didn't ask. So I'm culpable. I'll admit that to the nation. There's things that I did not ask that I should have asked. I didn't know at the time I needed to ask them, but in hindsight, some of the signals were there.
All right, so he didn't get into real specifics about that, but he's trying to accept some of the responsibility. He doesn't want the blame going on anyone. I think they're being very diplomatic about it. They did, you know, one of the things that was fascinating, Sue, I think you would have found this fascinating as well. I didn't think about this, but if they don't exercise, they had to exercise 2 hours a day, they lose muscle mass there so long. So that became a problem. Fred, do I have time to do the Q&A stuff?
Yeah.
Bill kind of did a lightning round here.
I told you we asked our viewers for questions.
Yeah.
Instagram, X, TikTok, and we got hundreds, all right? Here are our top five. Are ready? Quick lightning round, all right?
Okay.
From TikTok, Kristen writes, what was the first thing you ate when you got back?
Grilled cheese sandwich.
Uh-huh. Nick?
My flight doc made me some eggs and bacon and some avocado.
Tomato basil soup.
Tomato basil. So Sunny said she had the grilled cheese because
her dad was a vegetarian.
Yeah, she said her dad was a vegetarian, so it was like maybe a little homage to him. Yeah.
Also from X, here we go. What is the food and water supply like on the station? Any fear of running low or running out? Mm.
Well, we've had some cargo spacecraft that have had some issues, so there are some delays. There's enough food up there for the crew during their mission, plus many months. But when you have a delay in a cargo spacecraft, you have to be concerned about that or watch that closely, and we're doing that right now. Yep.
Okay, yeah. So from X, Les Reed writes, what do you find the most enjoyable? This is good. The ride up, the ride down, or the entire stay in between?
I like the entire stay. I mean, the ride up, ride down is just super fun and it's exciting and all that kind of stuff. But coming in that hatch and just floating down the space station is just super fun. And there's windows that you could look down or look out to the universe, and it's just ridiculous.
For me, it was the ride up. I mean, this was a test flight. We were doing test stuff that you only do. We were only the sixth crew for the U.S. spacecraft, six ones to go up in a new spacecraft for the first flight. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was definitely the ride.
I heard one reporter, I believe it was from London, when they were doing the Q&A, they did some of it on the telephone, make a statement before his question. I don't think he's wrong about this. This is probably the most attention to a space flight since the last shuttle mission, if you think about it. And not in a bad way. Look, the reason that we're all attracted to it was because of the delay, but I think it's been very useful and helpful in highlighting, you know, the missions and what they're doing. So in retrospect, even though there's a little blame that was probably properly cast on the Biden administration, in the end, I think they get a lot of, you know, good publicity for this mission moving forward as well. I have more audio that we can share during Audio Cut of the Day, but we have to do this here this afternoon.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
So I'm just going to have to tell you that I went too long there.
And what are you saying?
I may have to have you shorten just a little bit. And that's on me and
you
the astronauts.
It.
I blame the astronauts because
no
I just looked at the clock and I went a little too long there.
Fred, did you get any sleep? Are you sleeping again?
I think I'm catching up.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That would be crazy.
I don't know how long it takes. Maybe I just have bad sleep habits.
Did you wake up at any time during the weekend and it's like 3 in the morning and you're like, yeah, I'm ready to go?
I wake up at 3 a.m. and I can't get back to sleep till 5 or so.
That's right.
What do you do? Tiddlywinks?
Google? Do you doom scroll on Facebook?
I lay there and worry about everything.
Fred, that's
not
terrible.
Productive.
The worst of all the things
yes,
that were said.
Yes.
Much rather tiddlywinks or whatever
thank
Sue
you.
Just said instead of
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
I know.
It's National Crayon Day. Now, I bring this up because the excitement to me as a kid of the 64 colors of Crayola crayons. Remember that?
Oh,
they came in that skinny box, but and you'd open. Oh, and the smell. Oh, it was just so exciting to have the 64.
It was exciting.
I mean, you go from the red, green, yellow, blah, blah, to the 64. Ethan, it's indescribable.
Yeah, it opens
the
up joy. A whole
new
world.
There's just something about them being all nice and sharpened.
Yes.
And especially at the beginning when they're brand new. And then once they get a little bit more worn and dulled, it's not as exciting.
Not nearly as fun.
Yeah.
But that's what it is.
Yeah. And then they had the ones with the sharpeners, like the older that you got, like on the back.
Yep.
Good old days.
That is. On this day in history, now this has some sound, Mark. It's not music. It's just noise. 93 years ago today, in 1932, Ford unveiled its new V8 engine.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
93 years ago, in 1932, they have V8s. That's crazy. Fred, did you ever have a V8 back in the 70s? No? Dad, the Bottenheimers? No?
No.
Hey, let me, here, just real quick here. Listen, I'm going to play some audio of what a new V8 sounds like. You ready?
All right. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
That's the EVs.
It's the EV. It's
nothing.
All torque.
That's right.
It's torque-orama.
I like the sound. I like the rumble.
I understand.
I have a car that rumbles a little bit, so but I have a feeling that those cars are not going to be around for very much longer.
I'm afraid you're right. The Sundance Film Festival is reportedly moving to Boulder, Colorado in 2027. It's been in Park City, Utah for the last 40 years. But here's what I didn't realize. They had a contract, and it's expiring. So the new contract with Boulder will run through 2037.
Wow. And, that just seems weird, right?
Same. I just thought that was odd. But apparently, it's kind of outgrown Park City.
Well, that I believe. And you got a lot of people that are there to not go to the movies. They're there for skiing.
Right. And they're like, wait, did I just see someone that's a star? And I found this interesting. Fred, did you see this? The woman who founded Frank, which is a student loan assistance startup company?
No.
Okay. She was convicted on Friday of defrauding J.P. Morgan Chase out of $175 million.
Hey-o.
Charlie Javis sold Frank to J.P. Morgan but lied about the number of customers she had. She said, oh, yeah, we've got 4 million and we'll probably make it to 10 million by really soon. Well, she had 300,000.
Well,
and when
someone
they bought it,
be able to check that?
Well, like, here's what she did. She, by the way, is only 32 years old.
Okay.
They had a chief software engineer for Frank, is a guy named Patrick Vovor, who told the court, "Yeah, she asked me to generate false data that would make it the $4 million number," and he said, "Nope, not going to do it." So she paid a college friend $18,000 to do it. And so now she and a co-defendant face the possibility of decades in prison.
It'll be interesting to see how long she actually, you know, goes, because they always, stories about criminal sentencing always says, well, she can spend decades. The reality is, with a white-collar crime like this, it's typically only a few years, and then you have to pay the money back. Well, she ain't paying the money back, right?
No, she is not paying
the money back. So I'd be very curious to see if there's an update on what the sentencing would be.
I will be as well, but to think that, your college buddy could do it for $18K and nobody will find out. Okay, Hooters is trying to fight off bankruptcy by getting a family-friendly makeover. They're calling it re-hooterization. I kid you
not. Wait, what?
I kid you not.
Is that Hooters still open down by Keener Plaza?
I have no
idea. Does anybody
know?
Fred, you're acting. Fred just gave me a look like he didn't even know that a Hooters existed
Fred
there.
Fred said, yeah, I was there last night.
You know that there's a Hooters. There was a Hooters right there, you know, where Keener Plaza is. I have no idea.
No, I remember that one, but I don't think I've seen it in a while.
Well, there aren't a lot of specifics, but ownership says they want it to be a place where the whole family wants to go, not just dad. You think?
You know, can I just say this about Hooters? I never liked that place, and let me explain why. The food was never really that good, and it was overpriced.
Yes.
And then this is a guy thing. We'll see if the other guys can. I don't like the, like, what do they wear? It's like it's not
bikinis,
pantyhose, but it's like
the,
but no, it's like the,
oh yeah,
the hose stuff.
It's the bikinis out of the I'm sorry, you're right. The pantyhose under the shorts.
Right. I don't like that. Okay. That I don't like. It's like the Golden Girls at Mizzou. The Golden Girls wear like the stretchy stuff. I don't like that. Like, yeah. Give me the cheerleader legs or nothing.
Well, that's my position. You know, there's no mention of that in here.
It is still open, by the way, on Keener Plaza.
Oh, good to know.
I just know of the one. I think the one in the Kmart Plaza at Lindbergh and Lime Ferry.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Is there
I've
too.
Seen
in,
that.
In other news, there's something still called the Kmart Plaza.
Heck, I'm sorry, yes. I didn't mean Kmart. I meant oh. Home Depot.
Okay.
Oh. Home
but
Depot.
Was there used to be, did there used to be a Kmart there? Is that why?
No, that was, okay, that was right, close right. by, which is now gone.
And finally at Sue's News, we have today's random fact. People in North Korea believe hamburgers were invented by Kim Jong-il in 2009. That's part of propaganda. And that Mickey Mouse was created by China.
Well, you don't believe that, Sue?
Oh, my gosh.
I love that. But you can see how it would happen,
yeah,
right?
You totally can.
There you go. Monday Sue's News is in the books. We're going to take a very close look at that Supreme Court race in Wisconsin, which could have broader implications coming up next.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's. So thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
I told you it's kind of 80s focused today on the bumper music. Had to get a little haircut 100 in. Oh, there's more in the 5 o'clock
Love
hour.
It.
And I will put up the Spotify playlist after the end of the show as well. So there's a big Supreme Court race. They elect the justices in Wisconsin. And there's a little bit more on the line tomorrow politically than just that race. Jessica McBride is with me this afternoon. I've known her for a long time, investigative journalist. She writes for an outlet called Wisconsin Right Now. How are you this afternoon, Jessica?
I am doing well and glad to hear you're doing so well down there.
It's probably only been about 19 or 20 years since we've had any exchanges, so it's been a bit. It doesn't seem that long, but it has been that long. I'm surprised. I left in 2006. I left Milwaukee.
You're aging me now. Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Well, this is something here that I've had to explain to my audience. So we don't elect Supreme Court justices in Missouri. A lot of states don't. We do have some elected judges, obviously, but this has really become a big deal in Wisconsin, and a lot of this has become, you know, connected with national politics because it's a way for people to kind of take, in theory, the temperature of where the voters are. So maybe start with just a little background of this race tomorrow and what's going on.
Sure. So first of all, everyone needs to know that in Wisconsin, we have a liberal-controlled Supreme Court. It wasn't always that way. It's kind of flipped back and forth. We have an extremely aggressively partisan liberal majority on the Supreme Court. But one of those women is retiring. And so the race that's going on now is for that open seat. Thus, it's for control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. If Brad Schimmel, the conservative former attorney general, wins tomorrow, he flips control of the court to a conservative-leaning majority. If Susan Crawford, the liberal Dane County, Madison, it won't mean anything to your listeners, very liberal area of the state, judge wins tomorrow, she maintains the liberal majority. Now, why should someone in, you know, Missouri care about that, or someone in Texas or anywhere else in the country care
right.
about that? It's because it's widely believed that the liberal majority on the court, if maintained, would rewrite the congressional district maps in a bid to get rid of two Republican House members who are pretty solidly in their seats, Derek Van Orden in the western part of our state and Brian Steil. Now, Derek Van Orden, he flipped a Democratic seat that had been held by a congressman on the Democratic side for like 26 years or something like that. And he usually wins by like 2%. So that is always kind of a swing district.
Okay.
He was just reelected. So why does that matter? Because Elon Musk made this point yesterday. He flew into Green Bay, Wisconsin. He gave this long talk. He gave away $2 million checks, you know, to Wisconsinites who signed his petition against activist judges. And he said, this is for 12 U.S. House, because if they redraw those congressional maps and they get rid of Van Orden and Steil, they can flip control of the U.S. House to Democrats. And he said, so this is actually really about protecting Trump's ability to get his agenda through. And that's why there's so much national money coming into this race, millions and millions of dollars. You know, and everyone talks about Musk, and he spent millions and millions of dollars to help Brad Schimmel, the conservative. But Brad Schimmel is still being outspent by Susan Crawford, the liberal, because you've got money from Pritzker and money from Soros and Reid Hoffman, like, flooding in. It's because this race is nationalized, and it's perceived as being about Trump's agenda and his ability to get that through.
So we can get to that point here in a second, but how would you, what's your gut check on how this goes tomorrow?
Boy, you know, it's a turnout game, and pollsters have historically been very bad in Wisconsin at measuring the Trump voter turnout. Brad Schimmel needs 60% of Trump voters who came out in November to give this state to Donald Trump, by the way, to win. Historically, April elections in Wisconsin, Democrats have a turnout advantage. That's clearly what Musk is trying to neutralize. I will tell you that people on the Republican side are concerned. They think Brad Schimmel has a chance, but like Crawford was ahead in the polls by 5% like a month ago. This state is weird. It's kind of schizoid.
Yeah.
It did elect Trump, but we've got a Democratic governor, and it goes back and forth, and Republicans have a better chance in high turnout November elections. However, I saw a poll like an hour ago, and it came out from a pollster named Trafalgar. It's Republican-leaning pollster, but they were also the only pollster in the country pretty much in 2016 that predicted Trump would win some of the swing states he won, like Pennsylvania and stuff, and Wisconsin, Florida. And so they have a really, I actually interviewed the pollster back then. They have a really unique methodology to tease out Trump voters who don't want to talk to pollsters. And so they're regarded as like the most accurate at that. And they came out an hour ago and said it's a dead heat, like literally a dead heat. She was up 1%, but that was in the margin of error of like 2.7. So it's anybody's game. And in truth, if you talk to people behind the scenes, nobody knows for sure. Nobody knows how this is going to shake out. It comes down to turnout. And, you know, if Susan Crawford loses, I'm going to argue in a column that she made a mistake by losing sight of who she was running against. She's acting like she's running against Elon Musk. Like, you'd forget Brad Schimmel's even in the race if you listen to her. Okay, is that smart? Are people really that, like, angry at Elon Musk for trying to cut waste out of government? Like, I mean, I know people are unsettled, I think, by how much change is going on, but, like, a lot of people are maybe waiting to see how it plays out. It's a risk for her to run on that, because it's also bringing up this Trump voter turnout in a way you don't usually see in April. Bottom line is nobody actually knows, so it's really high stakes drama.
Absolutely.
Right,
Jessica McBride is here. She is an investigative journalist up in the Milwaukee area. She writes for Wisconsin Right Now. One of the questions I was going to ask you, you know, sometimes when you watch races from afar, you don't pick up on things like, hey, did the candidates suck? Because we've seen Republican candidates in big races, in Senate races, in races for governor, and you kind of see how they go, and in the end you say, okay, well, wait, they were a terrible candidate to begin with, rather. But Schimmel's not that guy, right? He's not a bad candidate, is he?
No, he's not a terrible candidate. Now, nobody I've spoken to thinks he's an A-plus candidate, to be totally honest. He's a little bit type B.
Okay.
Everyone thinks he kind of, he went on the offense a month too late. He kind of got beat up over rape kits, sort of dishonestly, I thought, for like a month by Crawford before he went on offense. So he's not like a perfect candidate, but even a really tough person on his side I was talking to say he's like a B plus candidate. He's a really good person. Like he's not my personal friend or anything, but I've interviewed Brad Schimmel for years. He comes across like a really good person. I was talking to someone today who said like he's really likable. He seems like just an everyday Wisconsin guy. He's not slick. He's not like this. He's not really a politician.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes he'll put his foot in his mouth. He'll make some goofy joke because he's not a slick politician. But that kind of works well in Wisconsin, which is really kind of a humble state when you boil it down. We don't like people who are too slick. And people like Trump in Wisconsin because he's off the cuff. He's authentic. He just says what comes to his mind. Well, half the state likes him. I'd say the other stuff, other half of it hates him. Brad Schimmel, probably a B plus candidate, likable. Susan Crawford has a lot of baggage. She's got ideological baggage. She filed lawsuits as a private lawyer to overturn Act 10, which is Scott Walker, Republican governor's signature reform, which saved taxpayers billions, not exaggerating there, of dollars. She filed a lawsuit seeking to overturn voter ID, which probably has about 70% popularity with Wisconsinites. She has a very sketchy sentencing record as a liberal judge. You know, there was one case I wrote about where she gave a slap on the wrist to a man who, excuse my being graphic here, he raped a 5-year-old girl, and she gave him 4 years in prison. He could have gotten, you know, decades, and he's already out. And she gave him a $500 signature bond and let him live across from an elementary school and work out at Planet Fitness. So there's been a lot of cases like that have emerged, and she's got a sort of a weak sentencing record and then this ideological history. And so she's not a perfect candidate. She's articulate, you know, on the stump and everything. I don't think she's as likable as Brad, but she's got some baggage ideologically. And right now the Democratic Party isn't that popular, to be honest.
We've noticed.
Trump wouldn't have won.
We've noticed for sure. So I want you to go back, because I remember Elon talking about this, but what was the deal with the $1 million checks? Because that was something he kind of offered to begin with. So he wrote checks to a couple of people yesterday?
Yes, he did. And so this is a huge controversy, but I think it played to Brad Schimmel's benefit. Elon Musk announced on Twitter he was going to give $2 million checks to Wisconsinites who came to his town hall in Green Bay and who voted in the Supreme Court race. And then the Attorney General of Wisconsin, who's a partisan liberal, went crazy and filed this immediate court action saying this was illegal. But Elon, by that point, was kind of like he pulled the football out from under this Attorney General because he switched tactics and put up a clarification on Twitter and said, no, it's not going to voters. It's going to go to people that sign my petition. And they're spokespeople. I'm paying them to be spokespeople for my petition, which is a petition against activist judges in general. It doesn't even mention either candidate. So to be blunt, it would be illegal to pay people $1 million to vote under Wisconsin statutes, but he clarified it, and it's not illegal to give people $1 million to sign a petition, okay? So Josh Call pushed this, the attorney general, and lost at every stage. He lost in circuit court appellate, and then it went to the Supreme Court yesterday. And even this liberal majority sided against him, so Elon's giveaway went ahead.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And he gave the checks out. Like, I watched the thing, you know, last night, and one of the people that got it is the head of the Young Republicans of Wisconsin. I don't know really who the woman is who got these huge $1 million checks. This helps Brad Schimmel because it gets Elon Musk in the news, and it gets Trump's agenda in the news, and the message Elon's trying to send, which is this is for control of the U.S. House, and that's all about getting out Trump voters, getting them off their sofas to vote in what's normally a low turnout April election.
Yeah.
And if enough of them do, Brad wins.
It's just so, you know, it's such a different election. We got a mayor's race here in a week, and luckily our mayor is going to get booted out, it looks like. But, you know, nobody shows up because it's not the general election. It's just rather sad when you look at the turnout. Jessica, thank you. so much. I have other Wisconsin-related questions that we would need an entire other segment to go through. For example, like what in God's name happened to our friend Charlie Sykes over the last 8 years? But that's like another topic.
It's like he jumped off a cliff and turned into a completely different person.
He's a friend. He was one of my mentors. There's no doubt he was very good to me, but good Lord, I can't explain that one at all. We'll have to talk. We'll have to talk sometime. Jessica, thank you so much for the update. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
Thanks. Nice talking to you.
That's Jessica McBride. Yeah, Charlie Sykes did the midday show at my station, WTMJ, and then he did an interview in 16 with Trump, and he roughed him up, and then he went to MSNBC and became a liberal again because he was a liberal. It's very hard to keep track of.
Yeah,
I know. Cusimano's coming up next. Last week, I talked about this Karen Reed trial. They have a documentary, 5 parts, on Max right now. The second trial, because that one ended in a mistrial, begins tomorrow in Boston with jury selection, and Paul Morrow, who is one of our great contributors, you see him on Fox all the time, is very dialed into that. So you're going to love some of this when we get to Paul on, because it is a crazy case. Frank Cusimano with us this afternoon. Everybody's hot right now. Where do we start? Battlehawks, the Blues, the Cardinals. Everyone's so good right now. There's nothing to complain about, Frank.
It is awesome. Let's lead with the Blues. Here's how great it is to be a Blues executive right now. You could either talk about your 9-game winning streak and about to nail down a playoff spot, or you could talk about Jimmy Snuggerud, the 20-year-old phenom from the University of Minnesota, who may win the Hobey Baker Award as the College Player of the Year, joining the troops today and at practice, and from all reports, looking like $1 million. So the future, I mean, think about this. Snuggerud, 20. Dalibor Dvorsky, 19. Zach Bolduc, 22. Neighbors, 23. Holloway, 23. Even like Robert Thomas is 25. Jordan Kyrou is 26. So the present is good. The future is even better.
All right. Talk about this stretch and what needs to still be accomplished to secure this playoff berth. You have the Red Wings tomorrow. The Penguins are in town on Thursday. The Avalanche on Saturday. So you got, am I reading this right? 3 home games in a row here?
Yes. And the Blues lately at home have been just gold. So as we speak, Mark, the Blues have played 75 games. They have 87 points. The Wild, who they're competing for that first playoff spot, have 87 points, but they've played one fewer game. And in terms of the Canucks, they are now 6 points behind the Blues. So, and I got to tell you, Mark, think about this, too, is that, you know, they could end up with more points than the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, even Colorado is not out of the picture right now, the Blues catching them. So, it looks great.
It's crazy. That's awesome. And then on the Cardinals front, I mean, come on. We all kind of knew it was going to be a red-hot start like this, right?
Oh, yeah. We predicted it all off-season long. Had such a good vibe about the squad.
But, dude, that was a great—I mean, look, not only did they win 3 games, but they did it very convincingly, and they looked good playing baseball.
Yeah, and, you know, like, the one guy that I'm really locked in on is Lars Nootbaar. And I don't think anybody ever doubted his ability. We just doubted, could he ever stay on the field? Could he ever have a season where he plays 140 games or something? Well, he's reached base in 8 of his 12 plate appearances. So, you know, at the top of the order, this guy drawing walks and hitting with some pop, that's scary. And then how about a guy like Nolan Gorman? This is how good the lineup is. Nolan Gorman gets a start yesterday, and he goes 3-for-3 with a 409-foot home run. Well, he can't play today because the Angels are throwing a lefty. I mean, that's how Ollie's got options, and most of them are good right now.
So let's talk about the Angels. You got one of the best players in Major League history that will be on the field with the Angels tonight, Mike Trout. And I saw somebody blast out, maybe it was Derek Gould or somebody else, maybe it wasn't Derek, like the top 20 or 30 jerseys that people are buying. There were no St. Louis Cardinals, and Mike Trout was not even on that list.
You know, it used to be kind of like a condemnation of baseball in that the best player in the world, Mike Trout, could go to like a grocery store and nobody would know who the heck he is. Part of it is his demeanor. Part of it, he plays on a bad team. And part of it's because he's been injured. But when he's right, make no mistakes, he's Mickey Mantle. I mean, he's got a .410 on base percentage. Very few players in the history of the game have ever combined that power and that speed.
So we were talking about the NCAA tournament earlier, all 4 number one seeds. I mean, look, those games were not even, outside of the Texas Tech-Florida game, they were not even that compelling this weekend, which is kind of shocking, Frank.
Yeah, it's the first time it's happened since, I believe, at 2008 that the 4 number ones are in, and that also happened, strangely enough, in the city of San Antonio. I think it's going to actually be good for the ratings. Like, you know, underdogs and Cinderella stories are kind of like maybe the uncle at one of your gatherings that it's okay for a little bit, but then you kind of want it to end. And so I don't mind the Cinderella in the first couple of rounds, but when we get to the final four, we want the heavyweights, and man, we're going to see some superstars.
Yeah.
I mean, the two player of the year candidates, Duke's going to trot out, you know, four number one draft choices on their roster. It's going to be a battle of the heavyweights.
Well, what would you say on the topic of battles about the Battle Hawks? Because, you know, Fox heavily promoted that last week. I didn't pay any attention. I'm an NFL guy. I don't really get it, but there's a lot of excitement that has remained around St. Louis, and they're off to a really good start.
Well, there's no doubt there's excitement in St. Louis, and there's no doubt we're going to draw the biggest crowds. I just get a little afraid when I see the game, and it looks like a high school game at a dome in terms of attendance. Not at our place, because we're going to rock and roll this weekend. But I just wish the other teams would draw a little better so we could have a great league.
Hey, on that topic, I brought this up at the beginning of the show, and we all want great things for the Cardinals, and they ended up selling out, you know, the home opener. But yesterday's crowd was bleak, and I know the weather played a role, and it's, you know, the first weekend of the season, but wow, there were entire sections that had nobody.
Yeah, now that could all change if they keep winning. And I will say this, City SC had a really good crowd yesterday. I think the weather had something to do with it, and people just didn't think they'd get out of the gates like this.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens, and this will be an interesting week. But, Frank, thanks a lot. We'll talk on Friday afternoon. I appreciate it.
St. Mary Magdalene, right?
We will be at St. Mary Magdalene. You think you might be able to be at that one in person?
I'm going to try to stop by. That's pretty close to the house. Maybe I'll bring Jeff Drew with me.
Yep, bring the king. We'll see you on Friday. Thank you, Frank.
Love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. St. Mary Magdalene this Friday, second to last stop, Ott's Tavern in Millstadt, Illinois, on the 11th. We have two more stops on Fish Fry Fridays. We had a great visit with all the folks at Queen of All Saints on Friday, and this has been I can't believe we're almost through.
I know.
We're on the closing side of everything right now. Dave Strom, associate editor with HotAir.com, coming up after the top of the hour, and then I'm very excited to talk with Paul Morrow about this Karen Reed case. And one of the things that I said after watching the documentary, and we'll see if Paul agrees, is to me, there's some similarities between the documentary Making a Murder about Stephen Avery in Wisconsin. And I've, you know, mentioned I was up there when his first trial took place. And then I know a lot of the people who covered the second trial. And that guy could not be more guilty. But the movie, the documentary made it feel like, oh, maybe he didn't do it. Well, he did it. In this particular case, I think she did it. Okay.
Now, but explain what it is.
Okay, she's accused of running over her Boston police officer boyfriend with her car, like rear-ending him in a snowstorm, leaving him for dead.
Oh my goodness.
The problem is that this case is so crazy. There's ample reasonable doubt just based on some of the activity of the other participants. So we'll see what Paul has to say, because again, the TV version of a trial and the real trial, sometimes two different things.
Get more at 971talk.com.